Introduction to neuromuscular disorders. Neuromuscular disorders represent a fascinating intersection of our nervous and muscular systems, primarily characterized by impaired proprioception, which is our body's ability to sense position, movement, and balance. Imagine trying to walk while completely numb or reaching for a coffee cup without being able to feel where your arm is in relation to its surroundings. This provides insight into the challenges faced by individuals with these conditions. Stroke, cerebrovascular accident. Overview and demographics. Cerebrovascular accident, CVA, commonly known as stroke, represents one of the most devastating neurological conditions facing modern medicine. Each year, approximately 795,000 Americans experience a stroke, with 610,000 being first-time events. The statistics paint a sobering picture. 87% of strokes are ischemic, caused by blood vessel blockages, while 13% are hemorrhagic, resulting from bleeding in the brain. To put these numbers in perspective, stroke affects more Americans than multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's disease, and ALS combined. Pathophysiology and types. Understanding stroke requires appreciating the brain's delicate vascular architecture. In ischemic strokes, which account for the vast majority of cases, blood vessels become blocked through three main mechanisms. First, arteriosclerosis gradually narrows cerebral blood vessels, often due to cholesterol buildup, until complete blockage occurs. Second, thrombosis involves the formation of a plug, thrombus, that can contain air bubbles, blood clots, fat, or even tumor cells. Third, embolism occurs when these thrombi break free and travel downstream, accounting for nearly three-quarters of all ischemic strokes. Hemorrhagic strokes, though less common, often prove more immediately dangerous. These occur when blood vessels rupture, either due to aneurysms, weakened vessel walls that balloon outward, or other vessel defects. The bleeding can occur in two critical spaces, the subarachnoid space between the brain's protective membranes, or directly into brain tissue, intracerebral hemorrhage. The mortality rate for hemorrhagic strokes can reach 50%, making rapid intervention crucial. Time is brain, the critical window. The phrase, time is brain, has become a rallying cry in stroke treatment. When blood flow is disrupted, brain tissue begins dying within minutes. Modern research has revealed that during a typical large vessel ischemic stroke, 1.9 million neurons die every minute. This creates an urgent race against time, where every second could mean the difference between recovery and permanent disability. Symptoms and initial presentation. Stroke symptoms often appear suddenly and dramatically. A patient might be having a normal conversation when their speech suddenly becomes slurred or incomprehensible, aphasia. They might be walking when one side of their body becomes weak or numb, hemiparesis. Visual changes, facial drooping, and dizziness can also signal the onset of a stroke. Healthcare providers use the FAST acronym, face drooping, arm weakness, speech difficulty, time to call emergency services, to help the public recognize stroke symptoms quickly. Impact on motor control systems. To appreciate stroke's effects on movement, we must understand the brain's motor control hierarchy. The prefrontal cortex acts as the supreme commander, planning complex movements and monitoring their execution. The supplementary motor area serves as the choreographer, sequencing movements into coordinated patterns. The premotor cortex functions as the adjustment bureau, fine-tuning existing motor programs based on sensory feedback. When stroke damages these areas, the consequences cascade through the motor system. Damage to the pyramidal system, particularly the corticospinal tract, initially causes flaccid paralysis, a complete loss of muscle tone. This typically transitions within days or weeks to hyperreflexia, where reflexes become exaggerated and spastic paralysis develops. Imagine trying to play a piano where some keys are stuck and others spring back too forcefully. This gives you a sense of the motor control challenges stroke patients face. Treatment approaches and innovations. Wolf's problem-solving paradigm. Stephen Wolf revolutionized stroke rehabilitation by emphasizing problem-solving over repetition. Rather than having patients mindlessly repeat movements, he challenges them to explore new ways of achieving functional goals. Consider a patient struggling to pick up a coffee cup. Instead of repeatedly practicing a standard grasp, Wolf might ask them to experiment with different approaches. Could they slide the cup closer first? Could they stabilize it with their other hand? This approach engages the brain's natural plasticity and encourages creative solutions to motor challenges. Bullock's XEM approach. John Bullock's quantitative surface electromyography represents a significant advance in rehabilitation technology. Traditional EMG biofeedback monitored single muscles or simple agonist-antagonist pairs. Bullock's approach simultaneously monitors multiple muscle groups, recognizing that functional movement requires coordinated activation patterns across many muscles. Think of it like recording an orchestra. You need to capture all the instruments to understand the symphony of movement. Taub's constraint-induced movement therapy, CMT. Edward Taub's CMT approach represents one of the most dramatic innovations in stroke rehabilitation. The therapy addresses a phenomenon called learned non-use, where patients gradually abandon using their affected limb due to repeated failures. Consider a right-handed person who experiences a stroke affecting their dominant side. Initially, they might try to continue writing or eating with their right hand, but after multiple frustrating attempts, they switch to their left hand. While this adaptation helps them function in the short term, it can lead to permanent loss of function in the affected limb. CMT counters this pattern by constraining the unaffected limb for 90% of waking hours over 2 to 3 weeks. Imagine wearing a mitt on your good hand that prevents you from using it. Suddenly, you must rely on your affected limb for everything from brushing your teeth to preparing meals. This forced use, combined with intensive therapy and biofeedback, triggers neuroplastic changes in the brain. Neuroimaging studies have shown that CMT actually increases the cortical area controlling the affected limb, demonstrating the brain's remarkable ability to reorganize itself in response to intensive practice. Biofeedback modalities in stroke rehabilitation. EMG biofeedback. Electromyographic EMG biofeedback serves as a window into muscle activity, allowing patients to see what they previously could only feel, or in many cases, couldn't feel at all. Surface electrodes placed on the skin detect the electrical activity associated with muscle contraction, translating it into visual or auditory feedback. For instance, a stroke patient working on ankle control might watch a line on a screen rise and fall as they attempt to activate their tibialis anterior muscle, providing immediate feedback about their performance. Force feedback. Force feedback adds another dimension to rehabilitation by measuring the actual force produced during movement. Three key technologies exemplify this approach. The feedback cane uses strain gauges to measure how much weight a patient places on it during walking. If a patient relies too heavily on the cane, an alert sounds, encouraging them to bear more weight on their affected leg. Think of it as a gentle coach, constantly monitoring and providing feedback about walking technique. The Limb Load Monitor, LLM, takes this concept further by measuring weight distribution during standing and walking. It's particularly valuable for teaching patients to distribute their weight evenly between both legs, crucial for maintaining balance and preventing falls. Force transducers can be integrated into various devices, from simple handheld tools to sophisticated exercise equipment, providing precise feedback about force production during rehabilitation exercises. Joint angle feedback. Electrogoniometers measure joint angles during movement, crucial for retraining proper movement patterns. For example, a stroke patient might struggle with foot drop, difficulty lifting the foot during walking. An electrogoniometer can provide immediate feedback about ankle angle, helping them learn to achieve proper foot clearance during the swing phase of walking. Clinical efficacy. Treatment outcomes vary significantly between the upper and lower extremities. Wolf's research shows that while 60% of stroke patients regain independent walking ability, only 20% achieve independent use of their affected upper extremity. This disparity reflects the greater complexity of upper limb control, particularly hand function, which requires precise coordination of 34 different muscles. Meta-analyses have shown particularly promising results for lower extremity rehabilitation. Schleenbaker and Manis's analysis of 8 studies involving 192 patients found an impressive effect size of 0.81 for EMG biofeedback. However, results for upper extremity function have been more mixed. While some studies show significant improvements, others suggest EMG biofeedback offers no advantage over conventional physical therapy alone. Based on 18th RCTs, Moss, 2023, rated EMG biofeedback for stroke as level 4 evidence-based in evidence-based practice in biofeedback and neurofeedback, 4th edition. Several randomized controlled trials, RCTs, demonstrated functional improvements in joint angle and gait. These studies compared SEMG biofeedback-assisted physical therapy, PT, with PT and sham feedback training. In most studies, SEMG biofeedback training contributed to functional improvement when added to standard care. Spinal cord injury. Understanding the impact. Spinal cord injury, SCI, represents one of the most challenging conditions in neuromuscular rehabilitation. When trauma severs or damages the spinal cord, it creates a devastating disconnect between the brain and body systems below the injury site. Imagine a metropolitan area where major highways have been suddenly cut off, while local roads, the peripheral nerves, remain intact. The main routes for sending commands and receiving information are compromised. Demographics and causes. The scope of spinal cord injury in the United States is substantial, with estimates ranging from 232,000 to 316,000 affected individuals. Each year, approximately 12,000 new cases occur. The causes paint a picture of modern life's risks. Motor vehicle accidents lead the statistics at 40.4%, followed by falls at 27.9%, and violence, primarily involving firearms, at 15%. These numbers have shifted over time, reflecting changes in transportation safety, workplace regulations, and societal patterns. Pathophysiology and recovery potential. Unlike complete severing of the spinal cord, which leaves little hope for functional recovery, almost all spinal cord injuries are incomplete. This crucial detail provides the foundation for rehabilitation efforts. Think of it like a damaged telephone cable. While many lines may be cut, some remaining connections can be strengthened and optimized through targeted intervention. The progression of symptoms following SCI follows a predictable but challenging pattern. Within 3 to 6 months post-injury, marked flexor spasticity typically emerges. Without intervention, this can lead to muscle shortening or contracture. Imagine a rubber band that's been held in a stretched position so long it loses its elasticity. Around the 6-month mark, extensor spasticity develops, further complicating movement patterns. Assessment and treatment planning. Initial evaluation. The cornerstone of successful rehabilitation begins with precise assessment. Percutaneous EMG evaluation in acute cases serves as a diagnostic treasure map, identifying which muscle groups retain viable connections to the nervous system. This information is crucial for designing targeted interventions that maximize recovery potential. EMG biofeedback protocols. The approach to rehabilitation mirrors many principles used in stroke recovery, but with unique considerations for spinal cord injury. Treatment typically progresses through several key phases, starting with the trunk muscles, proximal, and working outward to the limbs, distal. Therapists use EMG biofeedback to help patients gain control over basic postural muscles first. This creates a stable foundation for more complex movements. Think of it like building a house. You need a solid foundation before adding upper floors. Training begins in a supine position, where gravity's effects are minimized, then progresses to sitting, standing, and finally walking. At each stage, patients must master control of spastic muscles before advancing. This methodical progression helps prevent the development of compensatory movements that could hinder long-term recovery. Integration of force feedback. Force feedback devices play a crucial role in rehabilitation, particularly for gait training. The biofeedback cane and limb load monitor provide real-time information about weight distribution and balance, helping patients develop more symmetrical and efficient walking patterns. This objective feedback helps prevent the development of compensatory gait patterns that could lead to secondary complications. Efficacy. Evidence-based practice in biofeedback and neurofeedback, 4th edition, did not rate EMG biofeedback for incomplete spinal cord lesion. The research literature offers encouraging evidence for biofeedback's effectiveness in SCI rehabilitation. Brucker and Bieliva demonstrated that significant improvements in triceps electromyography, EMG, activity can occur after just one training session, with continued gains over time. This rapid response suggests the presence of viable neural pathways that can be activated through focused training. Petrovsky's research provided particularly compelling evidence for the value of continuous feedback. In a 2-month study comparing 30-minute daily sessions to continuous EMG feedback during walking, both groups showed improvement. However, the continuous feedback group achieved near-normal gait patterns, while the limited feedback group reduced hip drop by only 50%. This dramatic difference highlights the importance of real-time feedback in motor learning. Specialized approaches for different patient groups. Treatment strategies must be tailored for quadriparetic patients, those with weakness in all four limbs, versus paraparetic patients, those with weakness in the lower limbs only. The core principles remain similar, focusing on reducing spasticity, strengthening weak muscles, and promoting functional movement. However, the specific challenges and goals differ significantly. For quadriparetic patients, early focus often centers on maintaining hand function and preventing contractures. Training often begins with simple tasks like triggering a switch or maintaining a specific muscle activation level, gradually progressing to more complex functional activities. Cerebral palsy. Understanding the condition. Cerebral palsy, CP, represents a family of motor disorders that fundamentally differ from acquired conditions like stroke or spinal cord injury. Unlike these conditions that occur after normal development, CP results from damage to the developing brain before or shortly after birth. Think of it as disrupting the brain's initial wiring process rather than damaging an already established system. Demographics and prevalence. The condition affects 1.5 to 2 individuals per 1,000 live births in the United States, translating to approximately 10,000 new cases annually. While the initial brain injury occurs between birth and age 2, diagnosis typically comes after the first year when children fail to meet expected developmental milestones. This delay in diagnosis reflects the complex nature of early motor development and the brain's remarkable ability to compensate for injury during early childhood. Types and manifestations. Spastic cerebral palsy. The most common form, affecting 70 to 80% of CP patients, involves spasticity, a condition in which muscles remain in a constant state of contraction. This type subdivides into distinct patterns. Hemiplegia, 20 to 30% of cases, affects one side of the body, similar to stroke, but presents from early development. Imagine trying to learn to walk or reach for toys when one side of your body consistently resists movement. Diplegia, 30 to 40%, primarily affects both lower extremities. These children often develop a characteristic scissoring gait, where their legs cross while walking due to increased muscle tone in the inner thigh muscles. Quadriplegia, 10 to 15%, impacts all four limbs and the trunk, presenting the most significant challenges for independence and mobility. Dyskinetic cerebral palsy. Affecting 10 to 15% of patients, this type is characterized by uncontrolled, slow, and twisting movements, athetosis. These movements often intensify during stress or intentional movement, similar to trying to write while riding in a car on a bumpy road, except the bumpiness comes from within. Ataxic cerebral palsy. The least common type, less than 5%, which primarily affects coordination and balance, is the least common type. These individuals struggle with precise movements, showing tremors when reaching for objects or difficulty maintaining balance while walking. Think of it as trying to walk on a boat in rough seas. The challenge isn't just muscle strength, but also coordinating movements in space. Rationale for biofeedback intervention. Cerebral palsy patients often lack normal proprioceptive feedback, the brain's GPS system for body position and movement. Biofeedback serves as an external substitute for this missing internal information, providing visual or auditory cues about muscle activity and body position. Modern treatment protocols recognize that isolated muscle training isn't enough. Bullock's work demonstrates the importance of training muscle groups in functional patterns. For example, when working with a child who struggles to maintain head position, therapists don't just focus on neck muscles. They must address the entire postural control system from the trunk up. Positional feedback innovations. Advanced feedback systems, like specialized helmets with position sensors, provide immediate awareness of head position deviations. This real-time feedback proves more effective than traditional EMG monitoring of individual neck muscles, as it directly addresses the functional goal, maintaining proper head position. Movement pattern training. Bolick's research with the Minimax procedure illustrates the importance of teaching correct muscle recruitment patterns. This approach helps children learn proper sitting posture by immediately reinforcing correct gluteal muscle activation. The immediate feedback helps create a clear connection between muscle activity and functional success. Efficacy. The evidence supporting the use of biofeedback for CP is particularly encouraging. Studies by Bloom, Przekop, and Sanger showed significant improvements in upper extremity function when children received intensive EMG biofeedback training, 5 hours daily for 1 month. This intensive approach mirrors successful protocols used in stroke rehabilitation but adapted for the developmental nature of CP. Durson's team demonstrated that combining EMG biofeedback with conventional exercise produced superior improvements in muscle tone and joint range of motion compared to exercise alone. This synergistic effect highlights the importance of providing explicit feedback during motor learning in CP. Based on 5 RCTs and a crossover design, Donald Moss and Matthew Watkins, 2023, rated SEMG biofeedback for cerebral palsy as level 4, efficacious in evidence-based practice in biofeedback and neurofeedback, 4th edition. In particular, McIntosh et al., 2019, reported that 79% of the reviewed studies found improved motor function, and 63% showed gains across the International Classification of Functioning, Disability, and Health, ICF, domains. Torticollis. Understanding cervical dystonia. Torticollis represents a fascinating form of cervical dystonia, characterized by involuntary neck muscle contractions that result in abnormal head positioning and movements. The condition creates a complex array of symptoms, with head turning being the most common manifestation, affecting 4 out of 5 patients. Neck pain and head shaking each affect half of all patients, while abnormal posture impacts a quarter of those diagnosed. Imagine trying to keep your head straight while invisible forces constantly pull it to one side. This gives you a sense of the daily challenges these patients face. Types and origins. The condition naturally divides into 2 main categories, with idiopathic torticollis accounting for the vast majority of cases at 80 to 90%, while acquired torticollis comprises the remaining 10 20%. Idiopathic spasmodic torticollis, IST, stems from a neurodegenerative process affecting dopaminergic neurons in the basal ganglia circuits. This disruption leads to disinhibition of thalamic projections to the cortex, creating a cascade effect that results in postural dystonia. Demographics and distribution. The demographic patterns of torticollis reveal interesting gender disparities, with women receiving diagnoses twice as frequently as men. The condition typically emerges during the prime of life, with onset occurring between ages 30 and 50, centered around an average age of 40 years. In the newborn population, congenital muscular torticollis appears in 4 out of every 1,000 births, presenting its own unique set of challenges and treatment considerations. Anatomical considerations. Understanding torticollis requires appreciating the complex interplay of several key muscle groups. The sternocleidomastoid muscles serve as primary actors in this condition. These remarkable muscles originate from the sternum and clavicle and insert into the mastoid process, normally working in concert to flex the neck and extend the head. When contracting individually, they create the characteristic twisted neck posture of torticollis. The levator scapulae, splenius capitis, and trapezius muscles also play crucial roles in this condition. Each contributes to the complex movement patterns seen in torticollis, making treatment particularly challenging. The intricate coordination between these muscle groups normally allows for smooth, controlled head movements, but in torticollis, this delicate balance becomes disrupted. Biofeedback protocols. Modern treatment approaches emphasize bilateral SEMG biofeedback integrated within physical therapy frameworks. Cleland's innovative protocol utilizes 4-channel SEMG monitoring of sternocleidomastoid, and trapezius muscle groups bilaterally. The treatment follows an intensive schedule during its initial phase, with patients attending 2 45-minute sessions daily, 5 days per week, for 2 to 3 weeks. The primary focus during this period centers on achieving midline head position. As patients progress, treatment transitions to a maintenance phase on an outpatient basis. During the first month, patients continue with 2 sessions per day but reduce frequency to 2x weekly. This then further decreases to 1x weekly during the 2nd and 3rd months, allowing for gradual adjustment and stabilization of gains. Treatment outcomes. Long-term follow-up studies of patients receiving combined SEMG biofeedback and contingent cutaneous shock have revealed varying degrees of success. After roughly 2.5 years, the spectrum of outcomes spreads across several categories, with 18 patients showing moderate improvement and 8 achieving marked improvement. 11 patients experienced minimal or no improvement, while 15 were lost to follow-up. Particularly encouraging results emerged among patients whose torticollis duration was under 12 months, with 7 out of 10 showing moderate to marked improvement. Integration with other therapies. Modern treatment approaches recognize the value of combining biofeedback with other therapeutic modalities. When spasticity presents, clinicians progressively reduce SEMG levels while teaching patients to inhibit spasms during passive stretching and functional activities. This multimodal approach acknowledges that successful treatment requires addressing both the primary muscle dysfunction and its functional impacts on daily activities. The integration of various treatment approaches allows for a more comprehensive and effective rehabilitation program, tailored to each patient's specific needs and circumstances. The future of torticollis treatment continues to evolve as new technologies emerge and our understanding of the condition deepens. Ongoing research suggests promising directions for even more effective interventions, particularly when combining traditional biofeedback approaches with newer therapeutic modalities. Synthesis and future directions in neuromuscular rehabilitation. The landscape of neuromuscular rehabilitation has evolved dramatically through our understanding of 5 key conditions: stroke, spinal cord injury, cerebral palsy, multiple sclerosis, and torticollis. Each condition presents unique challenges, yet common threads emerge in their treatment approaches and the role of biofeedback in rehabilitation. Emerging patterns in treatment success. Across all conditions, several critical factors consistently influence treatment outcomes. Early intervention proves crucial, whether in the immediate hours following a stroke or the first months of torticollis. The brain's neuroplasticity appears to be most responsive during these early windows, although improvement remains possible even in chronic conditions. Multiple studies across these disorders demonstrate that intensive, focused rehabilitation efforts yield superior results compared to intermittent or generalized approaches. The integration of biofeedback with traditional physical therapy has revolutionized treatment approaches. SEMG biofeedback, in particular, has transformed from a simple muscle activity monitor into a sophisticated tool for retraining complex movement patterns. Bolick's XIM approach with cerebral palsy patients, Wolf's motor copy technique for stroke and Bell's palsy, and Taub's CMT protocol all demonstrate how technology can enhance traditional rehabilitation methods. The role of multiple modalities. Modern neuromuscular rehabilitation has moved beyond single modality treatments. Force feedback, joint angle measurements, velocity feedback, and real-time ultrasound imaging now complement EMG biofeedback. This multimodal approach provides patients and clinicians with comprehensive data about movement patterns, muscle activation, and functional outcomes. The success of these integrated approaches suggests that future treatments will likely become even more sophisticated in combining different feedback mechanisms. Patient-specific considerations. One clear lesson emerges from examining these conditions. Standardized protocols must be adapted to individual patient needs. The same stroke rehabilitation protocol that works for one patient may need significant modification for another, based on factors like lesion location, cognitive status, and pre-existing conditions. This individuation of treatment approaches, guided by objective biofeedback data, represents a significant advance in rehabilitation science. Future directions. the field stands at an exciting crossroads. Emerging technologies like artificial intelligence and machine learning offer possibilities for more precise analysis of movement patterns and more sophisticated feedback systems. Virtual reality and augmented reality systems may provide more engaging and effective ways to deliver feedback, particularly for younger patients with conditions like cerebral palsy. Research continues to reveal new applications for biofeedback in neuromuscular rehabilitation. The success of XIM in treating complex movement disorders suggests that even more sophisticated multi-channel monitoring systems may emerge. The integration of brain-computer interfaces with traditional biofeedback modalities may offer new hope for patients with severe motor impairments. Clinical implications. For practitioners, the evidence strongly supports incorporating biofeedback into comprehensive rehabilitation programs. Success requires careful patient selection based on cognitive ability and motivation, along with clear establishment of functional rather than simply physiological goals. The integration of feedback systems must occur within meaningful, task-specific activities, while regular reassessment ensures treatment parameters remain optimal. Long-term maintenance strategies must be considered from the outset of treatment. The field of neuromuscular rehabilitation continues to advance through the synergy of clinical experience, technological innovation, and research insights. As our understanding of neuroplasticity and motor learning deepens, and as technology provides ever more sophisticated tools for assessment and treatment, the future holds great promise for improving outcomes across all these challenging conditions. The ongoing convergence of traditional rehabilitation approaches with cutting-edge technology suggests we are entering a new era of more effective, personalized treatment protocols that will continue to improve patient outcomes across the spectrum of neuromuscular disorders.